Chapter 14. Hurry, he should have suggested to her to meet him out of doors, when he might have said he would call upon her. It was, in fact, the country custom to meet thus, and nothing else had occurred to him. Arabella had been met in the same way, unfortunately, and it might not seem respectable to a dear girl like Sue. However, it could not be helped now, and he moved towards the point a few minutes before the hour, under the glimmer of the newly lighted lamps. The broad street was silent, and almost deserted, although it was not late. He saw a figure on the other side, which turned out to be hers, and they both converged towards the cross mark at the same moment. Before either had reached it, she called out to him. I am not going to meet you just there, for the first time in my life. Come further on. The voice, though positive and silvery, had been tremulous. They walked on in parallel lines, and, waiting her pleasure, Jude watched till she showed signs of closing in, when he did likewise, the place being where the carrier's carts stood in the daytime, though there was none on the spot then. I am sorry that I asked you to meet me, and didn't call, began Jude with the bashfulness of a lover. But I thought it would save time, if we were going to walk. Oh, I don't mind that, she said with the freedom of a friend. I have really no place to ask anybody into. What I meant was that the place you chose was so horrid. I suppose I ought not to say horrid, I mean gloomy and inauspicious in its associations. But isn't it funny to begin like this, when I don't know you yet? She looked him up and down curiously, though Jude did not look much at her. You seem to know me more than I know you, she added. Yes, I have seen you now and then. And you knew who I was, and didn't speak? And now I am going away. Yes. That's unfortunate. I have hardly any other friend. I have, indeed, one very old friend here somewhere, but I don't quite like to call on him just yet. I wonder if you know anything of him, Mr. Phillotson? A parson somewhere about the county, I think he is. No, I only know of one Mr. Phillotson. He lives a little way out in the country, at Lumsden. He's a village schoolmaster. Ah. I wonder if he's the same. Surely it is impossible. Only a schoolmaster still. Do you know his Christian name? Is it Richard? Yes, it is. I've directed books to him, though I've never seen him. Then he couldn't do it. Jude's countenance fell, for how could he succeed in an enterprise wherein the great Phillotson had failed? He would have had a day of despair if the news had not arrived during his sweet Sue's presence. But even at this moment he had visions of how Phillotson's failure in the grand university scheme would depress him when he had gone. As we are going to take a walk, suppose we go and call upon him? Said Jude suddenly. Tea is not late. She agreed, and they went along up a hill and through some prettily wooded country. Presently the embattled tower and square turret of the church rose into the sky, and then the schoolhouse. They inquired of a person in the street if Mr. Phillotson was likely to be at home, and were informed that he was always at home. A knock brought him to the schoolhouse door, with a candle in his hand, and a look of inquiry on his face, which had grown thin and careworn since Jude last set eyes on him. That after all these years the meeting with Mr. Phillotson should be of this homely complexion destroyed at one stroke the halo which had surrounded the schoolmaster's figure in Jude's imagination ever since their parting. It created in him at the same time a sympathy with Phillotson as an obviously much chastened and disappointed man. Jude told him his name, and said he had come to see him as an old friend who had been kind to him in his youthful days. I don't remember you in the least, said the schoolmaster thoughtfully. You were one of my pupils, you say? Yes, no doubt, but they number so many thousands by this time of my life, and have naturally changed so much, that I remember very few except the quite recent ones. It was out at Marygreen, said Jude, wishing he had not come. Yes, I was there a short time. And is this an old pupil too? No, that's my cousin. I wrote to you for some grammars, if you recollect, and you sent them? Ah, yes. I do dimly recall that incident. It was very kind of you to do it. And it was you who first started me on that course. On the morning you left Mary Green, when your goods were on the wagon, you wished me goodbye, and said your scheme was to be a university man and enter the church, that a degree was the necessary hallmark of one who wanted to do anything as a theologian or teacher. I remember I thought all that privately, but I wonder I did not keep my own counsel. The idea was given up years ago. I have never forgotten it. It was that which brought me to this part of the country, and out here to see you tonight. Come in, said Phillotson. And your cousin too. They entered the parlor of the schoolhouse, where there was a lamp with a paper shade, which threw the light down on three or four books. Phillotson took it off, so that they could see each other better, and the rays fell on the nervous little face and vivacious dark eyes and hair of Sue, on the earnest features of her cousin, and on the schoolmaster's own mature face and figure, showing him to be a spare and thoughtful personage of 45, with a thin-lipped, somewhat refined mouth, a slightly stooping habit, and a black frock coat, which from continued frictions, shone a little at the shoulder blades, the middle of the back, and the elbows. The old friendship was imperceptibly renewed, the schoolmaster speaking of his experiences, and the cousins of theirs. He told them that he still thought of the church sometimes, and that though he could not enter it as he had intended to do in former years, he might enter it as a licentiate. Meanwhile, he said, he was comfortable in his present position, though he was in want of a pupil teacher. They did not stay to supper, Sue having to be indoors before it grew late, and the road was retraced to Christminster. Though they had talked of nothing more than general subjects, Jude was surprised to find what a revelation of woman his cousin was to him. She was so vibrant that everything she did seemed to have its source in feeling. An exciting thought would make her walk ahead so fast that he could hardly keep up with her, and her sensitiveness on some points was such that it might have been misread as vanity. It was with heartsickness he perceived that, while her sentiments towards him were those of the frankest friendliness only, he loved her more than before becoming acquainted with her, and the gloom of the walk home lay not in the night overhead, but in the thought of her departure. Why must you leave Christminster? He said regretfully. How can you do otherwise than cling to a city in whose history such men as Newman, Pusey, Ward, Keble, loom so large? Yes, they do. Though how large do they loom in the history of the world? What a funny reason for caring to stay. I should never have thought of it. She laughed. Well, I must go, she continued. Is Fontover, one of the partners whom I serve, is offended with me, and I with her, and it is best to go. How did that happen? She broke some statuary of mine. Oh? Willfully? Yes. She found it in my room, and though it was my property, she threw it on the floor and stamped on it, because it was not according to her taste, and ground the arms and the head of one of the figures all to bits with her heel, a horrid thing. Too Catholic apostolic for her, I suppose? No doubt she called them popish images, and talked of the invocation of saints. No. No, she didn't do that. She saw the matter quite differently. Ah. Then I am surprised. Yes. It was for quite some other reason that she didn't like my patron saints. So I was led to retort upon her. And the end of it was that I resolved not to stay, but to get into an occupation in which I shall be more independent. Why don't you try teaching again? You once did, I heard. I never thought of resuming it, for I was getting on as an art designer. Do let me ask Mr. Phillotson to let you try your hand in his school, if you like it, and go to a training college, and become a first-class certificated mistress. You get twice as large an income as any designer or church artist, and twice as much freedom. Well, ask him. Now I must go in. Goodbye, dear Jude. I am so glad we have met at last. We needn't quarrel, because our parents did, need we? Jude did not like to let her see quite how much he agreed with her, and went his way to the remote street in which he had his lodging. To keep Sue Brighthead near him was now a desire which operated without regard of consequences, and the next evening he again set out for Lumsden, fearing to trust to the persuasive effects of a note only. The schoolmaster was unprepared for such a proposal. What I rather wanted was a second year's transfer, as it is called, he said. Of course your cousin would do, personally, but as he has had no experience. Oh, as he has she? Does she really think of adopting teaching as a profession? Jude said she was disposed to do so, he thought, and his ingenious arguments on her natural fitness for assisting Mr. Phillotson, of which Jude knew nothing whatever, so influenced the schoolmaster that he said he would engage her, assuring Jude as a friend that unless his cousin really meant to follow on in the same course, and regarded this step as the first stage of an apprenticeship, of which her training in a normal school would be the second stage, her time would be wasted quite, the salary being merely nominal. The day after this visit, Phillotson received a letter from Jude, containing the information that he had again consulted his cousin, who took more and more warmly to the idea of tuition, and that she had agreed to come. It did not occur for a moment to the schoolmaster, and recluse, that Jude's ardor in promoting the arrangement arose from any other feelings towards Sue than the instinct of cooperation common among members of the same family. The schoolmaster sat in his homely dwelling attached to the school, both being modern erections, and he looked across the way at the old house in which his teacher Sue had a lodging. The arrangement had been concluded very quickly. A pupil teacher who was to have been transferred to Mr. Phillotson's school had failed him, and Sue had been taken as stopgap. All such provisional arrangements as these could only last till the next annual visit of H.M.M. Inspector, whose approval was necessary to make them permanent. Having taught for some 2 years in London, though as he had abandoned that vocation of late, Miss Brighthead was not exactly a novice, and Phillotson thought there would be no difficulty in retaining her services, which he already wished to do, though as he had only been with him 3 or 4 weeks. He had found her quite as bright as Jude had described her, and what master tradesman does not wish to keep an apprentice who saves him half his labor? It was a little over 8:30 in the morning, and he was waiting to see her cross the road to the school, when he would follow. At 9:20 she did cross, a light hat tossed on her head, and he watched her as a curiosity. A new emanation, which had nothing to do with her skill as a teacher, seemed to surround her this morning. He went to the school also, and Sue remained governing her class at the other end of the room, all day under his eye. She certainly was an excellent teacher. It was part of his duty to give her private lessons in the evening, and some article in the code made it necessary that a respectable, elderly woman should be present at these lessons when the teacher and the taught were of different sexes. Richard Phillotson thought of the absurdity of the regulation in this case when he was old enough to be the girl's father, but he faithfully acted up to it, and sat down with her in a room where Mrs. Hawes, the widow at whose house Sue lodged, occupied herself with sewing. The regulation was, indeed, not easy to evade, for there was no other sitting room in the dwelling. Sometimes, as she figured it was arithmetic that they were working at, she would involuntarily glance up with a little inquiring smile at him, as if she assumed that, being the master, he must perceive all that was passing in her brain, as right or wrong. Phillotson was not really thinking of the arithmetic at all, but of her, in a novel way which somehow seemed strange to him as preceptor. Perhaps she knew that he was thinking of her thus. For a few weeks their work had gone on with a monotony which in itself was a delight to him. Then it happened that the children were to be taken to Christminster to see an itinerant exhibition in the shape of a model of Jerusalem, to which schools were admitted at a penny a head in the interests of education. They marched along the road 2 and 2, she beside her class with her simple cotton sunshade, her little thumb cocked up against its stem, and Phillotson behind in his long dangling coat, handling his walking stick genteelly, in the musing mood which had come over him since her arrival. The afternoon was one of sun and dust, and when they entered the exhibition room few people were present but themselves. The model of the ancient city stood in the middle of the apartment, and the proprietor, with a fine religious philanthropy written on his features, walked round it with a pointer in his hand, showing the young people the various quarters and places known to them by name from reading their Bibles: Mount Moriah, the Valley of Jehoshaphat, the City of Zion, the walls and the gates, outside one of which there was a large mound like a tumulus, and on the mound a little white cross. The spot, he said, was Calvary. I think, said Sue to the schoolmaster, as she stood with him a little in the background, that this model, elaborate as it is a very imaginary production. How does anybody know that Jerusalem was like this in the time of Christ? I am sure this man doesn't. It is made after the best conjectural maps, based on actual visits to the city as it now exists. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.